I'm Sarah Marshall. I've worked with some of the world's leading brands to drive business growth. And now I'm sharing my knowledge and expertise with you. In my podcast, Lessons from the Boardroom, I talk to other successful leaders to find out how they've perfected their craft, driven success, and dealt with the challenges that leadership sends us. So come on, dive in.
Welcome to Lessons from the Boardroom. This week's edition is with Joker, and I have worked with Joe for years and absolutely love her. Jo is the head of purpose at BrandPie and has spent her career developing brilliant expertise in strategy, marketing, and comms. Welcome, Jo.
Thank you, Sarah. It's lovely to be here. Lovely to see you.
Nice to see you. Do you want to give us a little bit of an intro about you and where you've come from and what you do? And
sure, no problem. So yeah, as you said, I currently work as head of purpose at BrandPie. So we're an independent consultancy. We work with business leaders at pivotal moments in their business trajectory. So that can be M&A, new CEO, market expansion, that type of thing. So I really help them to define, or in some cases redefine, their purpose, so their meaning in the world, and align that with their ambition and strategy. So creating a really clear strategic narrative, and then we bring that to life through brand, through culture, and all those kind of great things as well. And I think I love what I do. I think I've always had this really strong belief in business as being a force for good. So making good money, but also doing good in the world. And I've had a very broad career. As you know, I've kind of done a ton of things, from sort of brand marketing through to, you know, sort of culture and engagement. And I've sort of almost squished all of that together now and actually work with organizations who really do want to go through change. So yeah, love it. It's lovely to be here.
It feels like the purpose work is really where your culture, where your heart sings, isn't it?
It is. And I think I look back, because I didn't really have a plan, I suppose, in terms of where I got to. I think I was always just curious to learn something laterally. And I look back now and I think that red thread is actually working with business to make them better, whether that's the business I've been working in or with clients in, you know, in making their businesses better. But there's been this kind of red thread that I didn't probably realize was there as I've been going through. It's only now kind of looking back that it's been this sort of subconscious thing that's driven me and still drives me. I think I'm still very much about learning things laterally rather than necessarily the standard trajectory upwards.
I love it. So talking about learning things, the point of this podcast is really to share what we as leaders have learned over our careers. And I've got three questions for you today. And the first question is, what is the best lesson that you've learned as a leader?
Ooh, I think it's probably one I'm still learning, actually, to be honest. And I think that's that there's no single definition of leader. You know, it's not a binary definition. And I still think, you know, collectively, we've got this quite outdated view of, you know, people who are leaders or not. And, you know, I think about leadership as, and good leadership is about building a bit of a toolbox. You know, it's the skills, it's the values, it's the capabilities, it's your vision and inclusivity and passion, that when you bring all those things together, and I don't, you know, don't underestimate the passion, enthusiasm, because I think that's what brings people with you. And so for me, I think it's been a long journey of getting comfortable in my own skin. So realizing that there's this sort of the stereotypical leader is probably not me, but that my own style is valuable in its own way. And interestingly, I did an insights profiling session last year, a bit like the Myers-Briggs, where you get a color, you know, sort of, you know, the typical red is your stereotypical, you know, type A personality. And that's not me at all. I'm a green. So very supportive, nurturing kind of role. And actually, it was a really big revelation to stop trying to be something that I'm not, but actually to really lean into who I am and to bring kind of my personality to this and to think about how I can, you know, be the leader that actually is really authentic to who I am and not trying to be, you know, and emulate someone else. So I think it's a huge lesson that's kind of an ongoing process for me, but I think it's been a really a valuable one. It's something I'd encourage others to think about as well.
That's so interesting, because I do think we've probably all got an image of what a leader should be, you know, very alpha, very fast-paced, dynamic, all of those things that you probably see in a movie from the 90s.
Yeah.
Actually, it's not just about that, is it? And with the way that the world is turning and changing, I think some of those, let's just call them green skills, are probably more relevant now, because that that the alpha is going to turn a lot of people off.
Yeah.
And understanding human behavior and how your colleagues work and react is massively important.
Yeah.
So actually that lesson, your best lesson, is one that you've taught yourself.
Maybe it's time. I think it's time, and it's experience does help with that. And I sort of look back now and think, gosh, I wish I'd learned it quicker. But I think most, you know, you have to go through things and just try things as well. And that's why I'm a big fan of the sort of, you know, the portfolio career, for trying things, working with different people, learning from others. I think all of that stuff helps you kind of almost realize what your own value. And, you know, there's always things you can be learning, but it's not about changing who you are, which I think is really important.
I love that. I love that. That's a great takeout. Okay, what do you think is your hardest lesson?
Oh, I think the hardest lesson is probably the flip side of the best lesson. And, you know, what we're talking about is that not everyone thinks that way. I still reasonably occasionally, luckily, meet quite traditional CEOs that actually struggle to deal with a woman at my level. And I'm sure you're very much the same, which in 2024 is absolutely ridiculous.
Yes.
But they seem to be bought into, as you say, to this sort of loud, shouty, confrontational version of leadership, which is really feels very primitive and quite limiting. As you say, we've got a huge amount of challenge ahead of us. And actually that sense of, you know, dialogue, conversation, curiosity, humbleness, all of those skills are actually going to be massively more important. So I think that's a really hard lesson, is that sometimes it's difficult to gel with these types of, particularly I find with clients, and you have to be somewhat adaptable in these situations, but it's never comfortable. And I don't think it's particularly rewarding for either side. I don't know if you've got any challenges, but it's certainly, or ideas how to combat that. But it's certainly one that I'm constantly coming up against still, and that sort of stereotypical, how do you be that more sort of, perhaps that slightly more aggressive style of leadership?
Yeah.
But I think it is starting to change. I think we're starting to see more women in the boardroom, more diversity of both backgrounds and thought. And, you know, it's this greater balance that's going to get the innovation that we need to fix some pretty hefty problems. But, you know, in the short term, I still find that really, really difficult.
Yeah, I often try and figure out what the best response is in terms of how do you call that out in a way that's not going to make things worse. And it's, you know, we should be able to just call it out very objectively, but that doesn't always work, does it?
No.
I had a conversation with a client the other week who had demonstrated some pretty crappy behavior. I actually did some research into how best to deal with it. You know, I turned to Google and I read an article by this Australian bloke. And it said, if there were two Australians talking about it, one would just say to the other, don't be a jerk, mate. And that actually really helped me, because the conversation that I had was not a big it wasn't accusing him of being anything other than in that moment, he was a jerk.
And
he was just like, yeah, I was. And it probably went against all of my instincts to write down exactly what had happened and evidence and blah, blah, blah. And what it took was somebody just say, nah, that was crappy behavior. And it was the right thing. I'm not saying that that's, you know, the right approach for every time, but it did work in that particular instance.
Yeah, it's about finding the way to do that, isn't it? To kind of not inflame the situation, or to, you know, to say, call out bad behavior, because we're in a different world. We're using AI a lot more, and, you know, you start to see, it worries me that we're training AI to almost bring in some of those beliefs as well. And you still ask for images and things, and they're very stereotypical. And I think now more than ever, we need to break this ridiculous notion of what is a good leader, or what is a woman versus a man, and actually the capabilities. Otherwise we are, you know, we're at risk of losing control of something that we really are at a pivotal moment ourselves to be able to sort out, I think. You know, it seems ridiculous, but, you know, it is changing, not as quickly as as I would hope, but you know, I can see glimmers of hope that we are starting to just see lots more women connecting, I think, as well as leaders getting together and actually debating some of these challenges and
Yeah.
You know, events where you're actually discussing these things where men are there as well. And I think it's more important that that dialogue is happening.
Yeah. How do you think we can help those aggressive types of leaders to embrace other types?
It's an interesting one because, you know, as I went through this kind of exercise with a group of other people, of which we had quite a chunk of Reds actually, and then we all went through this conversation about, you know, when you act to your type, this is how it makes me feel, and vice versa. And I think there was this real penny drop understanding that, you know, how to deal with people and how not to deal with people, and to just, if you want certain answers and certain outcomes, just to sort of, you know, tonally adapt things. And I think that was really good. So more of that. I think the risk then is that you start to just fall back to the norm. I think it's how do you keep that behaviour going in a regular way, which I think is a lot harder. But I think the dialogue and actually understanding each other and actually understanding why you react to certain people in a workplace or with clients in a way that you do. It's one of those things you probably want to, a bit like bias training, you almost need to do it on a really regular basis to just remind and to train yourself. Otherwise it's too easy to fall back to type, which we all have, which is, you know, part of the beauty of it, I think, and not prioritizing. I think it's interesting when you do culture pieces of work where some of those colors will be massively prioritized over others. So it's like a different, there's a different challenge of not being inclusive without even realizing it. So it comes back to that, you know, sort of where maybe organizations where Reds are really prioritized, that sort of really decisive leadership, versus in other organizations where you need a lot of careful consideration, those that fit that type will probably thrive as well. So trying to find ways to utilize that value in different ways.
I did a podcast interview with somebody called Sam the other day, Sam Watson. He is the founder of a business called The Agency, as in Gen Z. He's 20, maybe a bit older. And his best lesson is that he said that he's learned that he doesn't know everything about everything. And, you know, I think, you know, if you could translate that into one of those aggressive alpha type leaders, I mean, I have probably been one of those aggressive alpha type leaders in my time, you know, maybe not now, but if you could just slot that into people's heads, you don't know everything all the time. You're not always right. I think, you know, that would probably help. Maybe we're just
staying curious. I think that is the key to that. We're always learning and we should always be learning. Otherwise we're stagnating. And, you know, if everyone could just pick up that thing, you can be who you are, but actually just be open to learning from others, then we'd probably be all in a slightly better place, I think.
I think people feel vulnerable though, don't they? And
yeah.
You know, I know vulnerability can be a really positive thing, but I suspect that in a huge swathe of people, vulnerability isn't a positive thing.
No.
They'll feel exposed. And then that results in defensive behaviour, and then you're in the whole other loop, aren't you?
Yeah, you're back in the same loop in a different way.
Yeah.
So true.
So what is the one piece of advice that you'd give to people?
Oh, find your tribe, I think, is probably my best piece of advice. You know, building a network of brilliant leaders around you and diverse leaders around you. I think finding mentors, people you can have a coffee with, connecting with people outside the normal day-to-day as well. I think this is getting easier and easier, whether it's, you know, events, networking opportunities, talks, etc. You know, I used to find this quite daunting and I probably avoided them like the plague, but actually the more I've done it, the more I'm loving it and actually just talking to fascinating people. And I think it's that, you know, constantly learning. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think stepping outside your comfort zone. So I recently became a trustee of a local nature and sort of biodiversity education charity in Deptford, near where I live. And it's been fantastic to do exactly that, sort of step outside the kind of world I inhabit in a day-to-day basis and interact with people in my local community that I wouldn't normally do. And it's just made me better. I think it's made me a better consultant. It's made me a better leader just to kind of look at things from a really different way and still look at how, you know, this charity can thrive. And I think the other thing, and you touched on it certainly with sort of younger people, is that actually asking for feedback, really understand your strengths and the areas to focus. So I think being a leader can be lonely, but it shouldn't have to be. And I think, I always find the most fascinating and the most useful feedback I get are from the 20-year-olds, the young junior talent that I work with. And it's far more important to me that I am serving them, so that I'm helping their careers, I'm helping to inspire them, to help them become the great people. That to me is far more, important as a legacy, leaving a legacy of people that I've worked with that have become great than me as an individual. And I think that's just the way that I operate. So yeah, ask for feedback, find others. Generally I learn so much. Every time I have a conversation with a 24-year-old, 25-year-old, I'm like, oh my God, I've just, completely changed my perspective. And, we can't sit still. They're the future. So we need to listen to them.
And talking about find your tribe, where have you found your tribe?
So a few places that I've been sort of finding, and again, kind of related or adjacent to what I'm doing in the purpose space. So finding other businesses that are doing really nice, meaningful work, because you've got a common ground. So things like the Better Business Network, I've found them, working with X and Y. They're sort of, shared office space for purpose-driven businesses. Just, finding passionate people who are doing great things. Going to an event, I went to Purpose Fest earlier in the year, which was brilliant, and just it was the most sort of not corporate. It was in a really brilliant space in Vauxhall. Everyone talked to each other all day. It was a really welcoming, almost sort of festival like vibes. Yeah. And so finding things that's worked for me, I think Eventbrite, just connecting on LinkedIn as well with every group you can possibly follow that looks interesting, or people that look interesting, and then you start to see it. I find it quite hard. You have to trawl through a lot, I think, to find. But once you're on the right sort of mailing list, or just ask others, I think that's the other thing. We're often sitting at home, thinking, oh, I should be doing this and that. A lot of other people are too, I think. Yeah. Asking that question, has anyone been to any great events, met some brilliant people, what should I be doing? And you've always got this bunch of people who will give advice and come up with really great suggestions.
What do you think about the blurring of lines between work and non-work now? Because finding your tribe isn't just professional, is it? It turns into friendships.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess, yeah, we worked together for a long time, and I never really had any sort of delineation between work and home. Some of my life paid me money, some of it didn't.
Yeah.
And I think I'm still a bit like that. And maybe now, particularly post-COVID, where we work a lot from home, I think that has changed a lot. And it's important, I think, surrounding yourself by great people in your personal life is as important as it is in your professional life. And, I think it's always quite good to take stock and think about what's making me happy, what's not making me happy. I think, what's that saying, you should ask yourself every 30 days if you're happy, or, it's we forget to sort of go, what's making us, giving us joy, and what's not, and really starting to think about how we can address that, because we can't be at our best if there are things holding us back. So I think it's a good test, because they blur into each other, and if things aren't right in one place, it overspills into the other.
Okay, so find your tribe. I think find your tribe is such a brilliant piece of advice for leaders, because I suspect there's a lot of lonely leaders who think they might have to be behaving in a certain way, but actually, if they just had somebody to talk to about it, maybe wouldn't.
It was interesting. I went into a client space, a big, large corporate environment the other day, and the CEO is quite a formidable leader, very charismatic, but he doesn't have an office. He sits out with his teams, but he still looked like an island. I think everyone was almost too scared to approach him, or it just felt like he was, and actually just this brilliant person who clearly, is great to talk to, a lot of people could learn from. But I think culturally, it was a challenge there, because, it felt like people couldn't approach him, even though he clearly wants to be approached, because he's sitting amongst everybody. And I think, that's not hiding away. And I think that's you've got to, I guess, also create that open door, even if you don't even have a door. It's like, are you approachable enough? Are you finding the ways to connect with people and giving them the space to to feel like you can be an ear if they need it. And I think, you know, being an open leader as well is quite important to do that.
How do you create an open door when there isn't even a door that's closed?
Yeah.
Mind blown. Okay, we might need to cogitate on that for a while.
Yes.
This has been brilliant, Jo. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I have loved seeing you go from strength to strength to strength. Can't wait to see what next for Jo. I mean, who knows what it's going to be, but it will be fabulous, I know. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for having me, Sarah.
See you soon.